probably one of the best experiences you'll get in the country. And that's not just Scotland, that's the UK. In fact, let's just do the world. It's such a... it's about the people. Yeah, there's a building here. Yeah, there's whiskey here. But it's the people, I think, first and foremost, that you make the connection with. And I think the people traditionally on the west coast of Scotland are very renowned for being warm-hearted. We do like a laugh. We do like to speak to people. And I think that's a big part of the story of the success of this distillery, are the people.
We are Miriam,
Martin,
and Manuel. We love Scotland, travelling and whiskey.
On our trips, we talk to the people to bring their stories to you and to share our love for the water of life.
This is Inside Whiskey, the Barrel Talk. Today, we are at a distillery which is located just outside of Glasgow, in a valley called the Valley of the Wild Geese. You already guessed it, it's Glengoyne Distillery. And we're joined by a very special guest today, Gordon Dallas, who certainly is one of the most entertaining staff members of Ian McLeod Distillers and usually based here at Glengoyne Distillery. Gordon, thank you for welcoming us here at Glengoyne today.
Oh, thank you very much. And you're absolutely right. I used to work here and they said, no, please, go and travel. We don't want you here. So I'm back. I'm delighted to be back.
We're great. We're grateful. We're grateful that you're back.
No, you're great as well.
Yeah. Oh, well, absolutely.
And I do apologise for being a little bit late this morning.
But I was about to ask my first question, because actually this recording is taking place on a Sunday. Do you enjoy working on Sundays?
Hang on. Yes! I love it! I love getting out of my bed. No. I used to work on a Sunday all the time. And when you travel, I do mostly travelling Sunday festivals and Sunday fairs.
Around.
So I'm used to working
on Sunday. So you're used to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, before we talk about whiskey and all that, we would like to get to know you a little bit more. And to do that, we would like to get to know your background story. And your background story is quite unique.
I wonder what the couch was for. I thought, what's a psychiatrist's couch doing in this room?
Yeah, well, there are just some things like...
Take a seat.
Comedian is something that I heard. Fill us in.
That was very kind of you calling me that. Certainly people that paid money for a ticket never called me that. Yeah, the whiskey world has a wonderful way of bringing people towards it. You know, we come from all walks of life. Some people start in whiskey and that's their life. Some people maybe have been a bartender and go in there. I came from what you might call a media background. So I, you know, was a student, did the comedy shows after I graduated. A couple of us did sketch groups and doing live comedy. BBC got in touch and asked me to do some writing for some of the radio shows produced out of Glasgow. So I got a bit of work with the BBC. We started a comedy club, did a bit of comedy clubbing, and then another radio station came in called Talk Sports, and they were opening up a station in Edinburgh. So I managed to get the job as doing the sort of evening phone-in host, and I'd brought some of the sketches and comedy to Scottish football.
All right.
So that was quite a nice gig. I used to write all the sort of sketches and perform them as well, and it was an interesting show. And but media in Scotland just not as strong. Maybe I should have moved to London. There's just not that money up here in Scotland, It just wasn't the jobs. The station closed, and I found myself sort of at a crossroads. You know, media was that way. Not many jobs, and I'd done, I thought, all I could, and suddenly there was a job at Glengoyne going. I thought, well, I must get money. I'll just do a tour guide at Glengoyne for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. And that was 10 years ago.
So it's been a while, yeah.
I quite like it.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So it's coming from an unusual background of, I would just call it, the media.
Absolutely. So during your time as a, radio host, when you were also interviewing people from the football industry, so can you tell us who you talked to? Were there some interesting names? Or was it just like regional football players?
Yeah, it was mostly... I mean, I was an opinion for hire, so I did actually pop up in BBC Five Live, Radio 4, BBC World Service, BBC Three Counties, BBC Ulster. It was quite nice. And that was just me as an opinion. But having my own show was mostly Scottish football personalities. I think one of the, maybe the big names we had on was when Scotland were playing... it was Italy, I think it was, at Hampden, and it was a qualifier for the European Championships. Of course, Scotland get beat. We get beat by Italy. But Mark Donaldson used to work for us, and if you know ESPN, Mark works for ESPN out there in the States. He got a great gig after the station closed, whereas I didn't. He got a great gig with ESPN. He was taking Rod Stewart to, to the football match. And Rod Stewart came on the phone in with myself.
Oh, so you had a chat with Rod Stewart?
Had a chat with Rod Stewart. Rod Stewart will not remember it because Rod Stewart had been enjoying hospitality before the match. But yes, that's maybe one of the big names.
I like the way you put it diplomatically, enjoying hospitality.
I've honed that over the last 10 years working here at Glendalough. I've enjoyed it myself a few times.
So now... you can keep it diplomatic, the answer, if you like, but do you have a favorite anecdote, something extraordinarily funny that happened during that time with one of these people? You don't have to put names, but maybe something.
I don't know. Sometimes it always go with your gut instinct, you know, and quite a few things happen. I think possibly the one that should never happen to a interviewer, and I hope it doesn't happen today, is I didn't feel well that day, and I ate some food that I don't think was healthy. So I was doing a live radio, and I thought, something's happening down below. And and then I thought, I'm going to be sick as well. So I had to leave my guests in the studio. The guy was the manager of St Mirren at the time, called Jack Ross, and another footballer called Mickey Weir, who's very famous for being mentioned in Trainspotting. His name is actually mentioned in the book and in the movie. Mm-hmm. So they were left themselves without a presenter. But I was both, is this rude to say, but both friends were. And the adrenaline is so, I come back in to try and keep the broadcast going, then I had to leave again. And I had to get my producer to go and drive to a chemist to get me anything to block.
Oh my God.
But when it happens on live radio, and it was kind of 7, 8 o'clock at night. There was no one to take over. It was a long 3 hours.
Oh, my God.
Just maybe not funny. I don't know why I said it, but that's...
Oh, but definitely memorable.
That was, I'll never forget that.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That's life.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Jack Ross went on to become, I think, manager of Sunderland for a while, football club. And yeah, they won't forget it in a while either. Stuck in a studio without the presenter.
All right. So, and then you already said it, that you kind of moved into the whiskey industry, well, for the reasons you mentioned before, the radio station closing down and these kinds of things. You started as a tour guide,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
But now you're the experiential ambassador of Ian McLeod Distillers. What is that?
I have no idea. But you've got it right. A lot of people have the pronunciation wrong, including myself. So experiential. So tour guide, that's what I started as. And I suppose one of the epiphanies came on the training when I was up at the, we call it Burnfoot Lodge, up there where the tour finishes and you get your dram and you see a video, and it's a lovely room up there overlooking the waterfall. That's where I did sort of day one of training, having the 12-year-old Glengoyne and going, this is absolutely gorgeous. Looked round and thought, what else happens in this room? What do they do in this room apart from tours? What happens after 5 o'clock? What happens when the door closed? And the answer was occasional private dining, but not much. And I think that's my wee cogs in my head ticked round saying I could bring some of the media stuff that I do to this world of whiskey, because there's a big room here and we could do things.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
Quite shortly after I did a few months of touring, I started to write a sort of history of whiskey in my head to try and create a show. And I was, don't tell anybody that works here, but I was trying it out on the tours. When I was taking people around, I would do a little extra part at the washbacks, or a little extra part at the stills about why copper and who started coming up with this technology of distillation. So slightly out with maybe the Glengoyne tour. And it sort of resonated with the audience, it resonated with the tours. And I asked permission from the head office, can I do a history of whiskey? I'll pour the Glengoynes, and I'd like to go to golf clubs and maybe do this to supplement my meagre income as a tour guide. So I had to go to head office in afternoon, and there's a chap, I'll let them remain nameless, although Neil Boyd and Katie Muggeridge are part of the team that sat down in a very room like this, and I had to do a whole hour of presenting this whiskey story, and they were like,
pitch.
Doing it to them, I said, okay. And they gave me permission to go off and do a whiskey history show, which I did in my local hometown.
I'm sure you can be very convincing.
And that was the start of it. And that led Ian McLeod Distillers to approach me and asked if I would put together a script to launch Legacy Series Chapter 1 at the Edinburgh Festival in 2018, a theatrical tasting. And so they hired out our room at the top of the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, and we did a show bringing the Glengoyne Legacy Chapter 1 and a couple of other expressions, bringing it to life with a bit of costumes, theatre, a script. And on the back of that, they asked me to interview for this experiential ambassador, which is basically bringing whiskey to life through stories, not just flavor.
All right, so that actually sounds like there's no day like the other when you're trying to do that history kind of thing and trying to bring whiskey to life. But maybe you can mention some of the special days that you've had ever since starting as the experiential ambassador for Ian McLeod.
Oh, no, you're right enough. It's a wonderful job to have when you have to go around there. And I say it's a bit like, you know, you get a front label on a bottle of whiskey, tells you the ABV, tells you its name, tells you what region it comes from. And the back label is generally the story. Who makes it? Where did it come from? And yeah, there's so many stories that spring to mind. Certainly that one lives large, the one that got me the job in the first place, 2018, was a hell of a year, because that was the same year. In fact, it was here on this table that Richard Urquhart and Dave King and a few other of the Gordon MacPhail board were doing a malt master at Glengoyne. And I just happened to mention about doing the Fringe show later on that year. And I also do a little history talk that I've turned into a game of bingo. And they asked me to go to head office at Elgin in that year, to Gordon MacPhail, and do the game of whiskey bingo. And on that, they hired me to be the guest speaker at the 2018 Spirit of Speyside Festival, the gala speaker. Now, the next speaker the year after was the chairman of Pernod.
Oh, wow.
So that was that kind of level. So those two events.
Quite impressive.
Oh, yeah. To be the guest speaker. That's why I really sort of have a lot of affection for Gordon MacPhail. So that was doing whiskey bingo, history whiskey bingo at Ben Romach in front of 300 people in 2018. Was pretty special.
I would have liked to attend that event.
Well,
sounds like a lot of fun.
We'll get time today. We can do a little game. So that was quite special, right. I think, as well.
And you already said that you brought in the ideas for different tours and different events taking place here at the distillery. Would you say that your background in media gave you some skills that you could use to approach your work here and become this experiential ambassador?
Yes, because my first job, and that's maybe more pertinent to the previous question, my first job as experiential ambassador was, I was challenged by a chap, it's been here since 1999, pre-Ian McLeod days. Now the Brand Homes Director in charge of all our visitor centres, Stuart Henry, who really knows Glengoyne inside out. And he challenged me to put together a story of Glengoyne to try and maybe create a tour out of the information. And that really was my first job as experiential ambassador, was 6 to 8 months of just trying to find the archives, the research, and put a narrative together from 1833 to the current day. And if it's good enough, we might do a tour. So I spent months, and some of, I think, the happiest times was going into Stuart's office and saying, here's what I've discovered. Does this ring true? And Stuart would say, hold my calls. I think it was one memorable morning. He's very, very busy. And we're in the office for 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
Talking through Glengoyne, because he knows inside out. And after that process, I think we launched the storytelling tour in 2020, 2 months before lockdown.
Yeah.
I should have said the L word.
Perfect timing. Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. So we had the press, some influencers up at the Burnfoot Lodge, and we did a fantastic evening of the unveiling of this storytelling tour.
Sounds like a really cool tour.
And that was, I'm doing a version of it tomorrow. So to answer, Mariam, your question, yes, I think some of the background, the media training, the writing, the performing as well, all sort of influenced and informed what is the Glengoyne Storytelling Tour. And I'm very proud of it. It's on the website. We do it once a month in the summer months because we take a walk around the distillery. And we have five drams for each of the five custodians that have held Glengoyne.
Oh, yeah.
And
nice.
We talk about their influence and their contribution to the distillery and to the whiskey that's in the glass. So I really enjoy doing it. And believe it or not, I mentioned to you before a recording, I'm doing one tomorrow, which I kind of forgot about. I've got my laptop here. And it's for a specialty retailer in Glasgow called the Good Spirits Company. Yeah. And they've been multiple times to Glengoyne, but they heard about this and would love to see and hear the background, you know, the how Glengoyne's come to be, why it is here and not 10 miles up that road. So all these, and who started it and why, all these answers, hopefully they want to know. So it's not a process tour, it's a history story tour.
Storytelling tour.
That's right. So I'm really proud of it.
Sounds great.
Yeah, if it wasn't for my background, I don't think we could have put it together, but it's a big feather in my cap that Stuart Henry really helped guide that tour.
All right. And so you've worked together with so many people within the whiskey industry, but also within comedy, within sports, and so on. Now, who would you say are the more entertaining colleagues you've had? Whiskey, comedy, football?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good question. They've all got their...
How to diplomatically answer that.
Yes, that's right. That's right. They've all been enjoying hospitality at some point. Oh, no, some of the people in the whiskey industry are funnier than the people I saw in the BBC. Not all the time, but it's a very amusing... And I should just say this one. Yes, I'll see it. Before I was the experiential ambassador, I was down in London doing an event, and you go down to sell whiskey at this event. And I wasn't wonderful at those money machines where you have to take card payments on the terminals. And it was two bottles at £50 each, should have been £100. And I put in 100 and put the card machine over, and the person tapped it.
Oh, and it was one...
Yeah.
Pound.
Yeah.
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 When I shoot.
Exactly. When I realized that, I was like, it's a sharp intake of breath. You know, it's like the Thriller video when Michael Jackson, the camera pans right on Michael Jackson and he sees the zombies. It was almost like that moment. And I ran to the front door of Olympia in London to try and scan for the person. And I couldn't believe it. The point being, afterwards in the bar, my colleagues were merciless in ripping into me. Very amusingly. It was very funny. I thought, that's TV and radio standards. These, the comedy of it all was very nice.
Oof, I believe that. Oh, quite a moment.
It's my friend Big Davey. The next year said to the boss, he said, listen, we've had a complaint already. And the boss is like, what? He said, the whiskey's too expensive. Last year, he got two bottles for £1. So the humour in the whiskey industry is fantastic, I have to say. And even in football, when you get these guys off camera and get them off mic, it's much more amusing. Sometimes they have to be diplomatic on the microphone.
Yeah, so it's a different type of conversation you can have off microphone.
Correct. If the Scottish football players are as funny as their fans that were in Munich last year, then I believe they are
super impressive.
Entertaining.
Oh, yeah, the Tartan army in Munich, that was really impressive.
In their news, we've had a big bounce of German visitors coming in to Scotland on the back of the Tartan army in Germany.
Yeah, we love the Tartan army.
Yeah, there was like the entire city full of Scotsmen and Scotswomen. That was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But now, back to serious. Let's talk about the distillery a little bit. We know a lot about you. We don't know much about Glengoyne yet. Now, what would you say, just a brief summary, what do you think makes Glengoyne unique as a distillery?
Oh, yeah. I think it's picture postcard. It's a beautiful distillery.
Yeah.
100%.
If you are listening to this podcast, wherever you are in the world, and I know you've got a worldwide reach, just think of a cliche, but in a nice way, a typical Scottish whitewash distillery. And if you write it, draw it, you won't be far off Glengoyne. Probably, this really is what people think a distillery looks like. So visually, it's stunning. And I think it's the size as well. It's only three stills, just under 1 million litres alcohol output a year. So with three stills, we're not a massive... And there's nothing wrong with being big, but when you're small-ish and more craft and artisanal, I think that plays as well in our favour. And the location. We're 15 miles north of Glasgow, but it's beautiful here. So you're in a lovely, tranquil part of the Scottish countryside, right under a volcanic hill, and rolling hills are in front of us here as well. So all these things, I think, add to its charm. And of course, the history. You know, you can feel this has been here for a long time. This has been in this part of the country for generations. And I think it feels that when you come in. It's well established.
Yeah, that's so true. One more thing that probably makes Glengoyne quite special is the location itself. You mentioned it. But then the distillery itself is built in the Scottish Highlands. But the warehousing partially, I think, is in the Scottish Lowlands. So what makes Glengoyne a real Highland malt?
Oh, it's just a Highland malt. You're right enough. And if you come to the storytelling tour, you will find all about the 18th century law that divided Scotland into two zones, the Highland and Lowland zone. And that was the Wash Act of 1784. And that was basically the British government realising that these new industrial distilleries, mostly run by the Steen family, in the banks of the River Forth, called Kilbaggy and Kennetpans, they were pumping out an extraordinary amount of spirit that was getting sent down to England, the first export to England, 1777. And the money generated, it was said, was almost larger than the land tax of Scotland from these new industrialised distilleries. So we need to make money. So how do we do that? Well, let's protect them from the guys up in the north that are making the whiskey. Let's draw a line across Scotland and we'll police the lowlands and tax them. And those Highlanders, the Jacobites, they rebelled in the 45 Rebellion. Well, they can make it up there if they use their own barley in their own parish and the stills are small, but they're not going to export it down to the lowlands because we control the market. And that's when that line was drawn from the Firth of Clyde to the Firth of Tay. And although people have got in touch with us and saying this division of Glengoyne is not technically correct because the actual line was across the Campsies, well, you can't police across the Campsies. Uh-huh. You can only police across the roads.
Yeah.
And the closest road to that Highland line is now the 881.
Yeah. This one there.
Correct. The one we're looking at right now.
In front. Yeah, so our car basically would then be parked in the lowlands.
Technically.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So we're sitting in the Highlands right now, right?
That's right, yes. Absolutely, and that would be policed from. There was no distillery here in 1784, just crofts and farms. And but when the distillery was here in 1833, and people say, "Why is it not a lowland malt?" Well, in 1833, we went across that road.
Yeah.
For about 60 years, we're this side of the road, so that put down the DNA, the fact that we were in the Highlands.
Right.
And in 1883, we got a license to take a lease out across the roads, 1897, a second one. So it was only at the end of the 19th century we started moving across the road.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's a great Google fact. And when I was a tour guide, more than once I had to say to people trying to straddle the middle line of the road to take a selfie, you seen how fast the cars go?
Yeah.
And they go, get off the road!
Just don't do that.
Please don't do that.
You
know, so people want to have one foot on each side of the line. But yeah, it's a great fact. That goes right back to 1784, which that line was taken away in 1823, in the Excise Act of 1823. That's right, he says, convincing himself, 1823. But it stays to denote Highland and Lowland. But for taxation purposes, it was more harmonised after that.
Okay,
good. So now let us talk about the distillation of your whiskey. So the distillation process here at Glengoyne is rather slow. Can you translate slow into numbers?
It's like very slow. And we've got three stills and we have a sort of simultaneous double distillation with the spirit run. So we do our first distillation. And I've asked Robbie about this slowness. Why is it slow? Robbie, you're the manager. You started here in 2003 and said, why is it slow? And his answer was, the last guy told me that. And no doubt the last guy's told the last guy that, and it's just been passed down that that slow distillation, trying to keep the vapor in the stills for as long as possible, sort of maximizes the copper contact, which gives you a kind of fruitier, estery style of spirit. And that just seems to be passed down from era to era. And really, if you come in, I don't want to tell you too much of the storytelling tour, but that flavor lock, the last change in spirit character, happens just 2 days before Christmas in 1966, when the stillhouse reopens after a major refurbishment with not one spirit still. Now there's two spirit stills, two small ones doing the same job as the big spirit still did previously. And that division of the spirit into two small stills with slow distillation absolutely maximised copper contact. And that was under the new owners, Edrington, who would go on to own McAllen, Highland Park, Cuttysark, Famous Grouse, right, Tamdhu, yeah. Glengoyne. And they thought two small stills, slowly, would give it a fruitier forward, estuary, apple, green apple, pear, banana, style spirit. So they locked in the last flavour change of the spirit. And that was 1966. Nothing has changed since.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Now, when we talk about the distillation process, and our listeners will be quite familiar with the process in general, but is there anything else that is quite unique or special about the production process here at Glengoyne?
Yeah, well, you did mention about numbers, Mariam, so I do apologise. So we are trickling the spirit through the middle bowl. It's about 5 litres a minute. So it's very, very slow. If you're going to Islay, you know, and you can ask them about the flow rate, because if you've got that lovely, and it is lovely, peated, malted barley that is then fermented, you want to get through those stills pretty quickly. If you do what we do over there, here, you'll strip the barley, you'll strip the smoke out of that spirit. Right. So you kind of want to run the stills fast. And that's a good question, I'm sure, to ask these guys. We want to try and build the flavour in the stills. Our flavour's not in the smoke's not in the beer. So we want to try and layer the flavours in those stills. So 5 litres a minute, two beautiful, lovely copper swan neck stills, line arm, almost on the horizontal. So we want to make it tricky for those heavier alcohols to get over that line arm. We don't want them. We want the lighter estuary alcohols only to get over. So, and I think another big part of their distillation story is even the pipes that take away the spirit from the stills is copper. You could not get copper contact if you tried. We've got two small stills to do the second distillation, and then the condensing spirit gets taken away to the spirit cabinet in copper pipes.
Okay.
It's really no more. We couldn't put any more copper in this process if you could try. And you might, why copper? If you're listening to this podcast, why copper? It's just a wonderful cleansing metal.
Yes.
It cleanses that sort of, you have beer that can vaporize during the distillation process, and that dead yeast inside the beer can give a sulfurous note.
Yes.
And that copper cleanses those sulfurous, heavier notes and just gives that lovely, appley style of spirit to Glengoyne.
Yeah, I think that is an amazing idea, because I'm not a fan of the sulfurous notes. So
And to be fair, like, we've tried several Glengoynes. I've never had any sulfury notes in any Glengoyne. No single cask we've ever tried, because those are probably the ones that you might, well, that might be more prone to being sulfurous because it's just one cask, but never ever happened.
Also, yeah.
Yeah. It's just, again, maximum copper contact. That's what slow distillation really means.
As much as possible. So, you said it before that not much really has changed in the production process, and Glengoyne has been here for, I mean, many, many years. And you also said that it's one very picturesque and traditional distillery sitting here, and things have not changed, but still things are changing constantly, right? So there's a bit of a balance between tradition and what is new. So one of the more recent changes is regarding sustainability. So could you tell us something about it? How do you do it here at Glengoyne?
Yeah, I know. I am constantly amazed about that. And it started before I arrived here. Glengoyne, I think the plans started to get put into place 2010 to try and, we call them co-products. Mm-hmm. Not waste, because you can do something with the pot ale, you can do something with the spent lees. So the co-products, how do we assess that? And it was Robbie Hughes, whose office is right opposite this door, got the project underway. And again, who knew the power of plants? Wetlands. So Glengoyne, I think we were the first distillery to install wetlands across the roads. Mm-hmm. And it's a very small, I think it's a 1.5 kilowatt pump that pumps the spent lees, the stuff you can't to distill away, the spent lees from the second distillation across the roads into these reed beds. Mm-hmm. And about 15, 16,000 plants across there that will, over the space of 2-3 days, gently cleanse the sort of chemicals out of the spent lees. And you open up a little a door at the bottom of the wetlands and there's clean, clear, fresh water. I mean, who would guess the power of plants?
That's impressive, yeah.
Yeah, before amazing. That, you had to take tankers here, and tankers would take the spent lees away to be chemically cleansed at another off-site facility.
And all that needs a lot of energy.
Correct. And yet here, it's just plants. So I think over the course of the 2012s, 2013s and 14s, many distillery managers come out here to see what Glengoyne were doing. And I think that's really the template now for most distilleries in Scotland, is using these wetlands. And not only do they cleanse the... Because every plant has its own job to do. Some can take ammonia, some can take phosphorus out of the liquid, but it also attracts biodiversity. So we put some beehives down there as well, and with the amount of species of bugs and birds, as well as bees and wasps and all that, it's an amazing biodiverse area we've got to the left-hand side of the new Dunwich warehouses down there. So it's an incredible project, and we're very proud to be one of the first.
That's super interesting. Also being the role model for others here, it's cool, right?
Well, we had COP25 we had here, the big climate conference a few years ago. We had many, many film crews. I found myself on Thai television. Uh-huh. I've always wanted to be on Thailand television. maybe not for that, but let's move on. A news show. So they were, and we weren't known as ambassadors out here. So Glengoyne was quite a focus of the world's attention during that conference of the COP to come and see a wetland and the sustainability story.
That's very impressive, honestly. Now, we have just produced your whiskey environmentally friendly to an extent, well, as far as possible. But now let's talk about the whiskey. So after you've put the liquid into the casks, it's matured. And now we come to a point where Glengoyne turns 12 years old and we have a look at your core range. Can you just quickly introduce us to what else is part of your core range?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when Ian McLeod got the keys to Glengoyne in 2003... see, I never answer questions straight away. I always like to go around the houses first, as we say. The core range here was a 10, a 17, and 21. Mm-hmm. Now, the core range has almost quadrupled since Ian McLeod took the keys in 2003. We've now got a 10, a 12. We've reintroduced a 15 in the last few years. The 18, because of stock issues around Europe, has had to take a rest. Mm-hmm. It will be back. We've got a 21, a 25, a Glengoyne cask strength. And last year, we introduced the Glengoyne white oak, non-age statement, and white oak 24, which won't be around for too long. And we've got an amazing travel retail range, which I'm very proud of. I think this year I was on the good ship Cinderella out of Stockholm with the travel retail range. That's a show and a half. And we've got a 10-year-old first fill edition, which is all bourbon barrels, and a 15 Glengoyne PX finish, as well as a 28. The travel retail range, hopefully in some of the great airports of the world, is really something to check out. So what a range of whiskies that Ian McLeod have brought us.
It's massive, and all of them very impressive and very, very different also. Now, if you had to pick one, which of those whiskies would be your favourite?
Well, just as you were talking there, Martin, I thought I omitted a couple of special editions. One would be the teapot dram, which Glengoyne is very famous for. So it's not a core range. It generally comes out in October every year. That would be right up there with my favourite dram, I think. Mm-hmm. But if you had to ask me what I've been drinking, because obviously for product knowledge, I like to keep a Glengoyne or two in the house. I would say the last Glengoyne I had was on Friday night. I was doing a tasting in Edinburgh at the Glasshouse. And I came home and I thought, I'll just have myself just one. Whiskey, it was the 15, the Glengoyne 15.
All right.
It's a great whiskey. It's a great age. It's just got the woods beginning to take a big say in this whiskey, but the spirit character is still there as well. Mm-hmm. So a 15.
Nice balance.
Really nice balance. But the teapot dram might be it'd be definitely in there.
So, and you already mentioned a few cask types like bourbon casks, PX casks. So what else are you using? What are the casks you predominantly use at Glengoyne?
Predominantly use is the sherry casks. That's what we're well known for. Our 10-year-old in the core range predominantly refill sherry casks. But that's a lovely lighter style of whiskey, the 10-year-olds. And the 12 and 15 is the combination of Oloroso seasoned sherry casks in combination with bourbon barrels. And so I think the 12 and 15, the bourbon casks really showcase that fruity Glengoyne style and are really, really very, very pleasantly surprised at how the white oak has went down. Our latest addition to the core range, and that's all bourbon barrels, albeit with 5% virgin oak casks. But so bourbon and sherry, and that, I think Glengoyne, that look at some of the different oak expressions has been very exciting.
And if we move from predominantly used to cask experiments, is there something going on?
Oh, yes. He says, and I think you know as well, down the line, we may have something coming out the next series of oak expressions. If the last one was the white oak, when we really, you know, looked into that Quercus Alba from the United States, and 5% virgin oak. We may be, and I'm probably going to get in so much trouble for this, but we may be looking at something from the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh.
Now, there's been polite and been diplomatic. Something from the Southern Hemisphere that is very, very rare and very porous. And I better not say too much, but certainly people of another country use this for long maturations. We may be putting some Glengoyne in that style of oak cask. So there's something to tease your listeners with.
So now we can play the guessing game, should we?
Oh, yes. No, we already started a guessing game with Mike on the smoke hat topic, so I'm not in for more guessing games.
Oh, well.
So, and you already mentioned the teapot drum and that there are some special releases of Glengoyne outside of the core range. So could you tell us something more about these special releases and what, I mean, you already mentioned you like the teapot drum, but what can we watch out for? I mean, you almost answered everything already.
No, the teapot, for example, is a great one of the, it's a question, especially like around Europe, you know, have you got the teapot drum with you? No, I've not. Try the 15. Here's the 10 or 12. But yeah, it has a big affection in people's heart, the teapot dram. Because again, we talked at the start of the interview about the experiential nature of my job. And that was to get to the stories, the real ones. And I think there's been a wonderful article written by Christopher, who is the editor at large of the Whiskey magazine, about trying to get the real stories from the people that have actually worked at distilleries, capture their testimony, and, you know, before marketing firms make it up.
Yeah, right. That's exactly.
It. And the teapot dram is one such real story. It comes from real people. And his name was Duncan McNichol, who came here in 1976 as a worker, became the head stillman, stayed for 42 years. And he remembers getting three whiskies a day in the old days. A breakfast whiskey, a lunch whiskey, and a tea time whiskey. And this was over and above your paying conditions. That was just what you got. You got your friend to go with the big fingers and they got three fingers of whiskey and that was the dramming days. This was introduced a couple of hundred years earlier to stop the workers stealing the whiskey. Give them some. Yeah.
Make them drunk.
That's right. And Duncan was saying, as a young man, he couldn't do three whiskies a day, every day of the week. So him and his younger mates would put it into a teapot. And if you look down the yard, and we're standing or sitting in the boardroom right now, and down the yard on the left-hand side was the canteen. And the teapot if the teapot was in the window overlooking the yards, it meant the young guys had put the whiskey into the teapot.
Into the teapot.
And the older guys that already had three whiskies could walk down the yard and think, I might have another cup of tea. And so these were heavy drinking days. Mm-hmm. And at a party, I think Duncan had mentioned this story to Leonard, our owner, or Gordon Doctor, who's in charge of the whiskey. And the question went round, what would that teapot have tasted like? All that Glengoyne, single malt. And was it old? And Duncan's, no, it wasn't old. It was a two-year-older, three-year-older. You weren't going to get old whiskey for that, you know. But it was mature. It wasn't clear. And the discussion was, let's try and recreate that teapot. All that single malt. So generally, the teapot dram is five single casks, unchill filtered, undiluted, just put into a vat and bottled. This time, there's about 13 casks put into a vat and bottled. So it's just young Glengoyne, unchill filtered, undiluted, in sherry casks in your bottle. So it's a wonderful.
And it's a very cool story.
And it's a real story.
Yeah.
Actually, it's more important about it, I think.
Right, yeah. You know, it's not just made up marketing speak, whatever.
Correct, so no. Correct. And that's where, you know,
and whiskey is always connected to stories. It's like, that's what it's all about.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's so much about storytelling.
People and stories.
Yeah. That's right. And that's why at Ian McLeod, we've managed to interview a few of the people that have worked for us for 30, 40 years just to capture their stories. Because they remember people that go back to the 70s and the 60s as well.
Right.
So we want to try and capture. That's a big part of my job, really.
Yeah, and if you don't capture the stories now, they will be lost at some point.
Totally.
And you want people to know about those stories. Now, I'm very sure you've made so many people curious about Glengoyne, and people might start thinking about visiting. So when people come here to visit Glengoyne Distillery, what can they expect? What is the visitor experience like?
I think it's probably, I would say that, wouldn't I? Probably one of the best experiences you'll get in the country. And that's not just Scotland, that's the UK. In fact, let's just do the world. It's such it's about the people. Yeah, there's a building here. Yeah, there's whiskey here. But it's the people, I think, first and foremost, that you make the connection with. And I think the people traditionally on the west coast of Scotland are very renowned for being warm-hearted. We do like a laugh. We do like to speak to people. And I think that's a big part of the story of this success of this distillery, are the people. Yeah, and as long as this may continue, yes, we are passionate about the whiskey. We want people to go away with all the knowledge, but there's no script. You must say this. You must say that. Yeah, we want you to say all the facts and the figures, but just connect with the people in front of you. I think that really resonates, that people have a great time.
Oh, that's lovely.
And you also, I always recommend, and I do this abroad, I'm a good tour guide. I say, if you're coming to Glengoyne, by all means bring the car, but rather not. You can get a taxi or get to Glasgow. The biggest bus station in Glasgow is called Buchanan Street Bus Station. Ask for the number 10, then go on the bus, speak to the driver, Glengoyne please, and you can get dropped off right at the gates, do the tour, have great fun, buy a big bottle, and I suggest maybe buy a miniature or two. Go upstairs. Technically, you're maybe not allowed to consume alcohol on a bus, but it's malt whiskey, so I'm sure the government bend the rules. And I call it the happy bus. An hour all the way back to Glasgow with the people that have been on tour. Go upstairs all together. Talk about your experiences at Glengoyne together. You've come as strangers. Go back as friends in the bus. And if you've got a miniature or two, you can share that.
Let's hope you don't have angry bus drivers here soon after that recommendation.
Okay, I never said that bit. Okay, I'm speaking as my own, not as Ian McLeod. Have I got to say that?
No, but last question before we jump to the quick questions already. What is, I think we already know the answer, what is your favourite tour or tasting here at Glengoyne?
Oh, well, obviously, I would say the storytelling tour.
Let's make it two questions. Let's make it your favourite tour to give as a person working here, and what would be your favourite tour to be on?
Oh, yeah, I think
still the same.
Yeah. So big-headed. I think one of the great tours at Glengoyne, and I think we were pioneers in it, is the Maltmaster experience. £100, but you come in, you get a great tour around the distillery, then you come to this place, the manager's house. You go down to the blending room downstairs, and then you assess with eyes, nose, and palate five single cask, unchill filtered, undiluted casks from the warehouse. A refill, Firstville bourbon, and then three sherry casks. One's American oak sherry, two European oak sherry casks from the same year, almost in the same row, but they're both slightly different. Mm-hmm. You know, just to emphasise each cask is unique, even within very, very small, narrow parameters of European oak sherry. And you've got five, you taste them, you talk about them, and then it's up to you to make your vatting or blending of this, of these five, into a 200ml bottle. And it can be a lot of bourbon heavy, or it can be sherry heavy, or, as I think, a bit of both. And you walk away with your bottle of your own unique blend. That's very cool. That's
and,
a great truth.
And we've seen the table down there. It looks absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Like, just stunning.
That's very good. We had him speak... Speaking of Germany, we had some guys in from BMW on a, I think they'd go, a few years ago when I was a tour guide, they had exceeded their targets. So they're across here on a trip. We call it a jolly. I'm sure they called it Exploration of Scotland.
Of course, of course.
And they were doing the Maltmaster downstairs. And I still remember them saying the number four, which is the big, dark European oak sherry cask. They said this would be wonderful in the... air fresheners of BMW that are built in. You could just hit the button and that aroma would come out. I said, yes, but I'm sure the traffic police would not be that happy.
I was about to say.
The window got rolled down.
Whiskey and driving doesn't really match. Right?
No, it's just the smell though.
That's, yeah, but
it's, right.
Yeah, as you guys will know, the nosing is
the
so
smell
important.
It's
amazing.
Wonderful.
And they're so aromatic downstairs. So I think the Maltmaster, again, we were the first people really to get that blending course off and running years ago, but it's just a great experience.
I believe that.
Yeah, me too. So now we're jumping to the quick questions.
Oh dear.
Are you ready?
Okay, yes.
Good.
Seatbelts on.
Then the first one. What's harder, perfecting a joke or perfecting a single malt?
Oh, I have to say single malt. Because I don't do it.
Yeah. No, that's a cheeky one. What's the tougher audience? German whiskey geeks asking nerdy questions or the Scottish national football team after losing 4-0 to Germany in the opening game of the Euros last year?
The latter. That's, oh my goodness. All that build up, all that tension, all those goals for us.
Very many goals, yeah.
But we like the geeks. We do. I do like sometimes fusel oils and chill filtration. Yeah. Yes, but no, the goals.
All right, and then the last one. So if you were not working in whiskey anymore, would you rather go back to doing comedy or like radio hosting, or would you do something entirely different?
No, I think radio hosting. I love this. This has been great. I do like talking, and radio is such a great medium, and podcasting as well. I think that's, I would love to do that, to go possibly to go back to that.
All right.
But at the moment, to combine that with whiskey is even better. So you get the best of both worlds. But not comedy. Comedy is a... I'll leave that.
All right. Okay, leave that behind.
I still have demons. I still have memories. And I suppose, in a way, you cannot appreciate life until you have died. And I did that a few times on stage. So
oh,
I
okay.
really appreciate
okay.
life more than most people.
Oh, wow.
Okay, we're not going to ask for that.
That really is a psychiatrist couch.
We'll ask after the recording, so it's just off record. And yeah, so that was the episode. Thank you very much, Gordon, for having us and for openly answering all of our questions. And if you guys out there want to get to know more about Glengoyne Distillery or meet Gordon and the team here at Glengoyne, then we would recommend to just take the bus.
Number 10.
Number 10,
the happy bus.
Yes, thank you.
And in the meantime, just visit their website at glengoyne.com and follow them on social media at Glengoyne. And yeah, thank you for listening, and thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Gordon, for being here with us.
It was lovely, thank you.
We are Miriam and Martin, and this was Inside Whiskey, the Barrel Talk with Gordon Dallas of Glengoyne Distillery. Thank you for joining us on the Barrel Talk today. If you enjoyed this episode, tune in again next time for some more tales about the water of life. And in the meantime, follow us on Instagram at @inside_whiskey, on Facebook at @insidewhiskey, the Barrel Talk, or visit our website on insidewhiskey.de. This was Inside Whiskey, the Barrel Talk.